resource groups, and HERO, which is a nonprofit group which has provided inmate education and counseling for the Maryland correctional system. We are considering a packet which would be provided to inmates at the time of release. However, with recent cases of antibody infection in ARC who are under probation supervision, it appears use of the packet should consider all cases under supervision of Corrections Division and not just institution inmates. This packet would contain the information pamphlets on AIDS, needle sharing, and safe sex, a list of the alternative test sites, the names of community-based AIDS organizations, the names of the community outreach workers, and perhaps condoms with instructions for use. The packet would be given to offenders at the time they make contact with a supervising field officer. Lastly, we've ordered new and updated videotapes and training material for use with both offenders and staff. We've developed a 4-hour in-service curriculum to deal with major communicable diseases and a handbook on communicable disease, which has been written for non-medical staff. These in-service and education programs deal with risk reduction from a wellness standpoint applied to all of the major communicable diseases and not just AIDS, and the measures to prevent occupational exposure. Feedback from staff on the training program has been extremely positive. I've also included in the handout as Appendix D the most recent action plan for AIDS education to give you an idea of the scope and detail of our current efforts. This plan has already been implemented at OSP. I hope that this testimony has been informative. And
yes, it has, Kathy. Thank you. Questions for Kathy on the programs that Corrections are using? Representative Carter.
Kathy, on page, on the last page when you said the packets should be used, should be considered in all cases under supervision, are you suggesting that or will you be doing that?
That's the section I talked about where those are policies that are under consideration.
Okay.
In discussion, I originally said it should apply to all cases, but as one of the managers from the East region, so those are the eastern counties, said there are some people who would walk into the office who, if we gave them a packet like that, would be highly offended and probably are not in the high-risk group. So that's why we're trying to look at what, if supervising field officers can help to assess whether a person falls in a high-risk group, then we would be more selective, I guess, in providing packets.
Questions?
Representative Burke.
Kathy, in light of maybe newfound information that has not been thoroughly examined in terms of its trueness, and that we're saying everybody's at risk and not just a particular group that is more high risk than others, wouldn't it make sense to maybe even ask if they would like it? And then I think I'd rather for us as a state, in terms of a policy, to be embarrassed because we ask than to not ask at all and make an assumption that this person is not high risk and then stands chances of a suit later on.
And I agree with you very much.
I really think that we should. So I would hope that you guys would make it as a policy, a blanket policy to do it, to lessen the risk of being sued on the part of the state. I mean, we're having such limited dollars as it is now, and I'd rather for those just embarrassment.
Is it, I guess, just in dialogue, I'm not concerned about civil liability, I think more from the standpoint of trying to manage the public health crisis.
Yes, the social.
Any contact that we have, we ought to take the opportunity to try to do some risk reduction education.
Right. I agree.
Mr. Chair. Kathy, how many, what percentage of the inmates of the prisons have been tested for the HIV virus?
Again, we test for diagnostic purposes, and we've ourselves have only run about 20 tests.
Okay, that's so when you say there are no prisoners at state who have AIDS, who are diagnosed with AIDS, that means they don't have, you don't know, because you just don't know for sure because nobody appears to have those the symptoms that would show the active AIDS. Is that correct?
Again, AIDS is a specific diagnostic statement. So if somebody appeared with, like, Kaposi sarcoma or the pneumocystis pneumonia, we would clearly be able to establish a diagnosis that probably would include HIV testing.
But right now...
We wouldn't have somebody running around the institution who would be sick like that without our being aware of it.
It says several inmates have positively tested for AIDS. That would imply that there's just a few there who have that. But as a matter of fact, that means only a few who have been tested who have it. There could be a lot more.
You're exactly right. Our work with both staff and with inmates is for them to assume that they are all antibody positive, that they are all infected.
Yeah, I can understand that. But I felt the way you had to state this here, it was a little deceptive. I know you're aware
That's
that I know of one inmate who was released 2 weeks ago, who, quite frankly, on the release chart of the doctor, although I'm sure he only is tested positive for the AIDS virus, the medical release said straight out, AIDS. And he's known to have been sexually quite active in the facility. So that's kind of concerning. Thank you.
Was that a question, or do you want me to respond to that?
You go ahead and respond to it, Kathy.
You can respond to that part, but that makes it, this first paragraph here, after you, makes it a little misleading from the facts that we've known. Nina, you want to respond still?
Well, we certainly have had concerns about inmates who we've tested, and when you look back at their criminal records, they have been involved in assaultive sexual acts. And my comment was that I'm personally very pleased that the Health Division has a passive surveillance program at this point. There are, as you discovered in trying to work on the communicable disease statute, there are not a lot of firm answers or solutions, I guess. In terms of management of non-consensual activity within prisons, one of the recommendations of the conference that was sponsored by ACA was to review all of our security and surveillance procedures based on what we knew about how the virus was transmitted and decide whether or not we needed to make any changes. And again, there's no 100% guarantee that we're going to prevent all of those incidents from occurring. But based on our review, what we found was that we needed to simply re-emphasize existing procedures rather than to modify procedures.
Other questions for Kathy? Thank you, Kathy, very much for the information. I appreciate you going to the trouble to get it for us. Okay. We're going to take a 5-minute break. Now, it is 17 minutes after. I would like everybody to be back here 22 minutes after. A real 5-minute break.
What's your plan, man?
Come back to order. Liz, have you been back there a long time? Because I keep counting, see, and I didn't see you there, and we could have started up. Okay, open up the work session on 2404. I would like a little, some more lobbying on this bill here. I get a litter up there on my desk. All right, I'd like to have one representative of Lisa Turple from the recreational therapist and Sue Nelson from the occupational therapist. I would appreciate it if you'd come on up. Okay, last time we met, the committee asked you folks to see if you could work something out, and where are you?
Well, on the 1st of May, I met with Kathy Voorhees and discussed a suggestion for a further amendment to our bill, and that's the amendments 2404-4. I talked with her at that time, and she informed me that she would need to bring that back to the licensing board that was meeting, I believe, on the 8th of May.
Yeah.
Yeah, May 8th. And that meeting was going to take place. It would be brought up in front of that board, and we would hear back.
Okay. Sue?
Well, it was our impression at the licensing board meeting that there were lots of gaps in information, and so we proceeded to get as much as we could from the various professions of people in the community. We, at the time that we met on the 8th of May, we had the third set of amendments. In fact, we didn't even have them, but we had a written copy that was given to us. talking about the registration with the Health Division process. And on that day, that opened up a whole new piece of information that we didn't know about. We still had, at that time, some concerns about the wording. On page 2, I have the hand engrossed number 4 in front of me. Page 2, line 10, we still had some concerns about the words provision of therapeutic recreation services, which to us seemed a fairly all-inclusive type of a phrase, as well as our concerns, line number 24, professional activities of certified therapeutic recreation specialists. And those words in themselves felt fairly all-inclusive to us. We tried to get more information on those, and that is the information that we distributed today to the members of the committee is the packet that we felt updated the information at that time. There's stuff in there that we had gathered about also adaptive physical education profession, which I personally, and even Lisa and I, had worked together on a project before with the adaptive physical education people, and their use of leisure. We felt that profession also was using leisure and recreation a great deal within the educational system. So it almost seemed as though the more we delved into it, the more questions we brought up.
Okay. Questions from the committee? You folks haven't reached an agreement yet, then, right? All right.
Are we in work session, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we are.
I'd move that we table this bill.
Okay. It's a non-debatable motion. Representative Shiprack moves to table. Carolyn, would you call the roll?
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
No.
Chair Kotowski?
Aye. The bill is tabled. Now, I hate tabling bills in front of people. I'm not supposed to shoot a dog in front of its master and that sort of thing. But what I would recommend to the Oregon Therapeutic Recreation Society and the OTs, that right now doesn't seem to be much of a problem, but it's the anticipation of the chair that over the next few years, there'll probably be more and more conflict between these two professions. And I would ask you folks to work together between now and next session and try to bring, especially if these problems are resulted, and I would ask you, Lisa, to keep monitor of this and find out, you know, so that you can come before the committee if there are problems next session and, you know, detail them. And if those problems exist, first of all, I'd like you to work together to make sure they don't happen, but if they do, then I think this legislative body is going to have to take action in this area. But I think that the reason for the motion to table and the fact that it was successful is that many of the committee members, including myself, are not convinced at this point that there is a problem that needs to be addressed.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Did all of you receive the memo from Kathleen Beaufay with the legal opinion on...
Mm-hmm. I believe we all did, yes.
Okay. That was the memo that spoke to, at least in terms of Ms. Beaufay's opinion, that in fact certified therapeutic recreation specialists were practicing in violation to the Oregon revised statute.
I think the memo indicated that there may be. Mm-hmm. You know, Kathleen's language was not as strong as you're characterizing it. Because of that, that was one other factor for, yeah. But again, I would ask that, you monitor it real carefully, Lisa. We want to make sure that your profession stays alive and does well. And if there's going to be problems, then if you can't solve them in the future, legislature will have them. So we're letting the OTs off the hook here temporarily for at least one session.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask when we would have received that note from Kathleen Beaufay?
Oh, I think probably right after or during the last hearing. So that was what, about 2 weeks ago, two, maybe more.
Mr. Chairman, yeah.
It's dated 4/29. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
I'd just like to make a statement. The reason I didn't want this bill tabled because the OTs didn't really work with these people to try to come to some kind of conclusion about this bill. And I will personally be available to them, to these. The recreational therapist the next time I come back to present a bill for them, because I think it was really terrible that there was not the cooperation of work, that these people being in the same state and using our university systems received the kind of professional training they are to not have tried to work with them to do a better job.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, one more thing. Since I don't seem to have the note from Kathleen Beaufay, could you ask staff to be sure and supply that to me?
Sure. Could you get a copy of
that?
We'll
do that.
The representative. Okay. All right. We'll open the hearing on, 4/13, right?
Whichever one you want to open next. That's the next one.
Let's do 4/13. That's a nice, simple issue. Oh, I was just being sarcastic, Representative Carter. There are no simple issues before this committee. I'd like to call Ed Patterson and John Powell, since they're the only two that are scheduled to testify, and just have them come on up here together, which is about as close as we're going to get them on this issue. Okay, John, you have a copy of the Dash 6 amendments, right?
Mr. Chairman, John Powell, the Oregon Healthcare Association, I do.
Okay, and...
That's not a marriage proposal, sir. That's something I do have the amendments.
I was about to ask about that.
Yeah, I saw it. Representative Carter, why not?
I said
I do.
All right, and Ed, you have a copy of them.
Yes, sir.
And I understand that these have been argued over on the Senate side. They're not included in the bill. the Hospital Association would like to have them included, and John does not want them included, nursing homes don't. So since I'll let Ed propose them first and then let you go from there, John. Ed?
Mr. Chairman, I think my formal written testimony is being passed out, but I'm going to deviate from that and let you put that on the record. But at this point, maybe I can best give you a little description, since we were instrumental in having the bill introduced in the first place, of what the problem is and our attempt to compromise what the solution, an acceptable solution, might be. Number one, there are a number of hospitals in this state that have attached nursing homes, long-term care facilities. As you know, Senate Bill 463 would require that the Senior Services Division assume the statutory obligations of licensing all nursing home facilities in the state. Currently, under the statute and administrative rules, and has been for a number of years now, any hospital administrator who is the administrator of the hospital with attached nursing home beds is not required to have a nursing home administrator's license. The Oregon Health Division, who currently has the authority to license these hospitals with hospital-based nursing homes, promulgated rules last summer that would require those nursing home administrators to have a nursing home license at some point in the future. Those rules were not adopted, but essentially we were put on notice that that was a consideration. I have spoken with Mr. Ladd from Senior Services Division, who will apparently ultimately have the authority for licensing these hospitals, which will create the necessity for separate licensure of the nursing home parts of the hospital. And on top of that, he has indicated to me that it would be his intention to totally separate the nursing home aspect of that hospital from the acute care side, and therefore will require that the hospital administrator must have a nursing home administrator's license. So we are anticipating with this legislation the future requirement that that will occur. The problem exists that under the current rules of the State Board of Nursing Home Examiners, and was testified to when it was in the Senate committee, there is required for licensure a 6-month internship to be served by the candidate, which means for our hospitals, and currently we have 9 hospitals who have these type of attachments. They're all small, they're all rural. Those hospital administrators will be required to take a 6-month absence from their job as a hospital administrator to comply with the internship requirement that is currently under the rules of the State Board of Nursing Home Examiners. The bill, as originally introduced in the Senate, would recognize that a hospital administrator's experience should serve in lieu of that 6-month internship. It became apparent after the first hearing that the committee was not receptive to allowing just credit for any hospital administrator so that he would not have to serve the 6-month internship. And we attempted to compromise the bill and say, all right, we will just request through amendments limiting this waiver of the 6-month internship to the 9 hospitals in the state that have an attached nursing home section. At the same time, the nursing home industry offered proposals that would have a one-time grandfathering of those individuals who are currently hospital administrators of those 9 hospitals who met the other qualifications. This proposed amendment by the industry was accepted by the Senate committee. The problem is, and I'm not sure it was fully realized by the committee at the time they adopted the amendments, is that it only applies to 4 individuals in the state, not the 9 hospitals, but only 4 individuals who meet the qualifications, because they must have served for at least 1 year as an administrator of a hospital with attached nursing homes, and they must meet some other requirements. My concern is that we sought some long-term solutions for these 9 hospitals. It's an institutional solution that we are seeking, not an individual solution. We believe that the Dash 6 amendments would basically be a long-term solution for the hospitals, inasmuch as the one-year requirement will still be intact, but any new administrator that would be hired would either have to comply with that one-year requirement of service in a hospital with attached nursing home before he could get the waiver. He must meet all the other requirements, with the exception of a potential educational requirement that may be there. So we are requesting that this committee consider the Hospital Association's amendments so that we can make an institutional solution for 9 hospitals in the event that the administrative rules will be promulgated, as has been stated by the Senior Services Division, as opposed to an individual solution. What in essence happens in these small hospitals is that they have a very high rate, turnover rate, of administrators. Most small hospitals are training grounds for younger administrator types who use those to move up in their careers. And what happens is, as has happened since the bill was introduced, we've had 3 of the 9 hospital administrators that have subsequently resigned. And therefore, the grandfathering that would take place under the Senate amended bill would occur on the effective date of the bill, and those 3 hospitals that are in the process of hiring new administrators would not be able to be grandfathered in. So we end up, after passage of the bill, with those 3 hospitals still having the same problem that we introduced the bill to resolve. So we are proposing to the committee that we take a long-term solution approach and not a short-term solution approach as was adopted, and we'd be happy to respond to any questions you might have.
Okay, are there questions for Ed?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hammerstein.
Do I understand that this is a bill that addresses administrative rule provisions that are not yet promulgated?
Yes, Representative Hammerstein, it does, to the extent it would require that by statute the State Board of Nursing Home Examiners must accept 1 year experience in lieu of their current 6-month internship. So it requires them statutorily to waiver that for these specific institutions.
But the rules have not yet been promulgated.
Representative Hammerstead, the rules on the requirements for a nursing home administrator's license are promulgated. The problem arises is that these hospitals have never been required in the past to comply with those rules because they were not required to have a nursing home administrator's license. That particular rule has not yet been promulgated, but it will be, as has been stated by management of SSD, and already an attempt has been made to do that by the Oregon Health Division.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Then the scope of the rules are being expanded to include these nursing homes.
Yes, ma'am.
Can this problem be addressed through those administrative rules at the same time that those rules are promulgated?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hammerstead, at the time Senate Bill 463 was discussed over in the Senate Committee, I offered amendments to do that, and they were denied. So I did the next best thing and approached the agencies to see if they would indeed cause some dispensation to these 9 small hospitals. And they indicated no, that that was not in keeping with their philosophy of uniformity of licensing, and that they would indeed promulgate rules to require these 9 hospitals to have administrators with licenses. So what my proposal in this amendment would be to set a state policy that we will accept hospital administrators with a year's experience of a hospital with an attached nursing home in lieu of the 6-month internship, which appears to be the only solution since the Board of Nursing Home Examiners testified in opposition to the proposal at the Senate, on the Senate side. So it appears to be the only solution.
Representative Kirk.
I wanted to wait until I hear John Kupas ask this question, but you mentioned it again. You're not making a blanket request. You're talking about only in this situation right now, and that new administrators coming on would have to have that experience. Is that right?
Representative Carter, the bill, the amended bill, which is the Senate version that is before you, attempted to make a single window approach, a specific period grandfather. And the problem with that is that it is just that. It doesn't affect what happens in the future. And therefore, it limits, the problem is nine hospitals wide, and it limits it to just four hospitals, because the individuals in those four hospitals are the only ones who meet the requirements. My proposal is a different proposal in that, yes, it does extend it, because in my judgment and personal experience and comments I hear from persons responsible for managing those hospitals, it would be virtually impossible to hire someone to manage that hospital that would meet those qualifications by having a nursing home administrator's license, Oregon license, to even recruit somebody like that, because they're just not available to be recruited. That's the problem. So it's an ongoing problem, created primarily by the size and the remoteness of these facilities, that we need to look at it from a long-term basis as opposed to a very narrow window that the Senate version allows.
Okay, I had a question for you. Now, as I'm looking at these amendments, on lines 6 and 7, it says, any